Derek, you're going to read us another piece from the book.
Okay, yeah. This is Lexi and Hakeem are now fleeing Sydney. The police raided their flat just as they left, so they got away just in time. They're heading for the country and Lexi's parents' orchard, where they hope to hide. They're in a car and it's driven by Aisha. Aisha is Hakeem's sister-in-law. We turn into the highway and head for the southern tablelands and Jugalong, a place for Hakeem to hide while we get it all sorted. The highway going out of the city is still pretty deserted, but an increasing number of heavy trucks are heading in. Aisha pushes the car along hard, well above the speed limit. I lean forward to tell her to slow down. We don't want the cops onto us. In a split second, I realise she's asleep. Her hands are on the steering wheel, her head has dropped forward, her eyes are closed. I scream. Aisha's head jerks upright. The car hurls off the highway onto the shoulder. Aisha brakes. She emits a terrified, an ongoing lacerating sound of terror. We skid, spin a complete circle, and end up facing the way we were going. The car rocks violently. Aisha struggles to regain control. We're off the shoulder now and crossing to the right. We're on the inside lane, the middle lane, the outside lane. We're heading for the oncoming traffic. Everything is in slow motion. I'm leaning over Aisha's shoulder, looking through the windscreen, and we're both screaming. The headlights of a truck looms out of the darkness. In a millisecond, it's gone in a roar and a thump of air. It's all too fast for the truck driver to even sound his horn in panic. We swerve back on course. Aisha regains control. She slows, and I can hear her gasping for breath. No, that's me, sobbing as though I'd just run for my life. I can hear Aisha, over and over again like a howling dog. Then, Allahu Akbar. Aisha, Aisha, Aisha. Hakim's leaning forward and repeating her name soothingly. Aisha, Aisha, it's okay, it's okay. A lay-by appears. Aisha swings the Subaru in and skids to a halt. She collapses, hands on the steering wheel, head buried. I put my hand on her shoulder. She's trembling so much that the seat's shaking. Hakeem unbuckles his safety belt and leans across to hold her. After a moment, she shakes him off, gets out of the car and vomits. I can hear her in the dark at the rear, retching and sobbing. I go to her. She's bent double, one hand on the car roof, the other holding her coat clear of her dripping mouth. She waves me away, and I get back in the car. Oh my God, that was so close, I say to him. I'm shaking too. It was my fault she drove all the way from Melbourne to Sydney, then I let her drive again, Hakeem says. Mine too, thoughtless, selfish, poor woman, I add. I sit thinking about how it might have all ended if I hadn't leaned forward.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Do we agree?
Yeah.
It's really good. Yes, it's gripping writing. She was seeing Joan. She was kind of jumping off her chair, you know. Yeah, excellent. And what I want to know now is how much do you know about, you know, people from Afghanistan and people who are asylum seekers? I mean, it certainly sounds as if you have
not a great
really
deal.
Good knowledge
I did
of
research,
it.
Research, of course. I got in touch with one of these asylum support groups who put me onto schools, who put me onto students, and I interviewed people, and that's how.
You interviewed people.
Yeah, I interviewed students, and I read through reports, particularly reports on torture, and how people responded to torture afterwards. Because Hakeem's family, it's the backstory, and it's not. It doesn't come out to him in the story, but he. His parents were his mother and father killed, and he had two brothers who were killed. It's not specified who killed them, how they died. So he's gone through a huge amount of trauma, hence his photography, which is a recurring theme throughout the book. Him taking pictures and, you know, how it's an escape in one way, and as I said earlier, it's something that, you know, leads him into a dreadful situation as well.
What do you want to say? How does it make you feel listening to that? You're good?
Oh, it's a good story, yes.
Strong story, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And It also makes me feel that that's part of what the work that we can do, which is pretty painless sort of stuff, is to actually sit around together and just listen to each other's stories. Mm. And so when you said at the beginning of the show, you know, that some people said, oh, it's not my problem, you know, I don't have time. Mm. We do have time. It's an illusion that we don't have time. And I'm discovering a lot about that. The more I do my living ASAP as sustainably as possible, and the more things I actually choose to do without, just not bother with, the more time I find I have. Isn't that strange? Mm. So I think that's a very strong piece of writing. Peter, do you have any questions or thoughts about what we've heard?
No, but I love the story.
It's good, isn't it?
Good.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're writing for a younger audience, it needs to engage them. They're obviously dealing with big issues here and big issues that they are facing and they're going to face, continue facing. But it needs to be a good story. You need to obviously believe in the characters. You need to, as a writer, you need to catch their voice. And I sort of looking back on my stuff, so much of it and my characters are female, and all I can put that down to is when I grew up, my father left my mother with three of us when I was really little. I was three. So I grew up in a house. There was my mother, my grandmother, an auntie, and two sisters, and five really strong aunties who supported her. And at one stage, we were evicted from the house because the guy who owned it wanted to move in. So we split up. And I went to live with my cousin. You know, we all split up with cousins. And I think it was great because I was living with my favourite cousin who was a bit older than me. And I always looked up to him when we shared the same bed and we slept under the same overcoats and all had these adventures together. So anyway, that's a long way of going around of why I brought a lot of female characters. I think that's the reason. And I have two daughters and two granddaughters. Mm. So it's a world of women, you know. I didn't have any rugby playing fathers or anything like that.
That's a funny thing that so many men, you know, they seem to sort of feel that there are too many women, so they become more aggressive. Mm. But you're actually saying that because you've had this world of women, you know, you're less aggressive. You don't need to be. Mm. But it is also, you do probably have a feeling of what you can do as a man is appreciated, because probably people are sort of dying for somebody to mend a roof and mend all the electrics or not.
I'm not very good at that.
Oh, dear.
My wife's better than me. I do things, but it takes me a long time to get
You
out.
Grew up with the ability to attract a woman who can do that sort of thing.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, well, I think it's a great story. And you're saying that it is actually intended to be read and appreciated, enjoyed, talked about by younger people.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's a crossover story that, you know, it will be read by adults as well. And I'm getting some feedback. So it's a thing you don't really know. It's aimed at young people, but I'm hoping adults will, you know, pick it up too and also get something out of it.
Yeah, so if you're listening to the show, you know, just tell us what the name is and all the details of it again, please.
The title is On the Run, and of course I'm Derek Mortimer. My website where you can download it is derekmortimer.com, and you will find it there on Smashwords and eventually on all the other ebook platforms.
And just from our point of view, we've been given a television channel, and so we're going to eventually be, the global TV show will become television somehow or other, hopefully quite soon. And so what I think is that, you know, because we're working with children in eco-schools around the world. And we also have this thing called the Global Vision Song Contest, which really helps because, you know, kids want to sing, teachers want to teach music and la-la. So we have these things that are sort of special, unique things, and they all come together. And the way it would seem to me is that where your piece would be fitting in our story would be, and where we'd fit in your story, is that we would sort of, you know, have a space on the TV channel for ideas and all sorts of things. People might, kids, for example, I can imagine them sort of, you know, playing the parts of Lexi and Hakim. And then, you know, discussing them in groups and things like that. And a lot of activity. I think that there's been this world domination, I'm sure you would agree, Joan, particularly that, you know, the domination of the world's media by the same old voices going on and on and on, and not just presenters, I mean politicians and, you know, high-flying celebs and all this kind of stuff. The days for this are surely over.
Let's hope so. Well, with social media now, and we were talking earlier about journalism, and, you know, I didn't mention there's so many websites where you can get all sorts of journalism, and mainly, I mean, for me, the problem with mainstream media is the stories they don't tell, the information they don't give.
Questions they don't ask.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. One of the stories that came out with the Ebola crisis, apparently the country that sent the most doctors is Cuba. I'm not pushing a bag or waving a barrel for Cuba, but no one mentioned it. It was in one of these, you know, websites that I came across it. So why don't they say things like that? There's obvious reasons, but, you know, the stories they don't tell.
Joan?
Well, I can't think of anything to say right now, which is unusual, but I can't think of anything to say. But you say about Cuba, at least Obama is getting back on a thing with him, so maybe they won't get as much of a bad rap as they used to. Cuba, maybe, I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a help.
21st century isn't as all bad.
No.
Well, I was hoping you'd let Derek maybe read us another little excerpt.
Excellent.
Yes, 7 minutes.
Right, so let's do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, this is a gentle piece. It's when Hakim and Lexi arrive at the orchard. They didn't make the full journey in the car. Things happen and they finish up having to hitchhike part of the way. And there's a very chilling incident happened during the hitchhiking, which I won't read. So this is a gentle piece. They've been dropped off outside the orchard, at the entrance to the orchard, the dirt road that runs up to the house and the sheds. Before we reach the house, I see something hurtling down the road towards us, dust spurting out behind. Hakim looks at me nervously. He must think his legs are going to be torn off by a rabid dog. The dog reaches us and leaps up at my chest, almost knocking me down. Blue Dog, my lovely Bluey. His great big wet pink tongue is all over my face. He runs mad circles round me, then around Hakim, who is standing still as a stump, then around both. Hakim must think it's really disgusting or weird, or probably both. I drop onto one knee and hug Bluey, or try to, but he won't keep still. He charges back down the road to where his mum and dad are working. He turns and hurls himself in our direction again, nose stretched out in front, tail behind, yelping and leaping and slobbering with excitement. I hope mum and dad are as pleased to see me. Hakim and I reach the house, dump our things on the veranda tiles. Everything's neat and tidy. The ornamental grapevine, which gives so much shade in summer, has been cut back. The flower beds are cleaned up and mulched. Mum's work. Bluey's disappeared. Then I see him running towards the house again. Behind him, Dad, on the quad bike, a dust tail spiraling after him. He stops in front of us, pushes his cap back from his weathered face. Well, I'll be buggered, he grins. I walk over and hug him. I can't stop the tears.
Thank you. That was terrific.
Good, yeah. Thank you. So, thank you very much for you.
We have really enjoyed your reading.
Thank you.
And you're surprised? Delighted?
I'm delighted, yes. And it's nice to actually read the story, because stories, you know, read out loud, engage in more people. And and you find something when you're reading it that you didn't allow, when you didn't realise was there, when you're simply reading it to yourself.
Mm. Exactly.
So it's a great, you know, it's a great help for me too.
Thank you.
And yes, I think that you need that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do, and also you do read well, so it's not boring, it's actually engaging. That's why you wanted to hear more, wasn't it, Peter?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you very much, and we wish you all the best with this story. I think you've certainly illuminated my mind a bit about the challenges of getting an e-book, attention on an e-book. And so it's just another part of what I think we need to be doing in the coming year. And
Thank you for inviting me in.
How long did it take you to write it?
Oh, about a year, 18 months.
Mm.
And then revisions and revisions and revisions and rewrites.
Mm. And you've enjoyed writing it?
I love writing, yeah.
Just to say that last week I was reporting on the radio show that I cannot understand what...
Just keep still, please, everyone. Well, you were right.
Yeah, just that last week I met somebody in the street who was actually from Villawood. He was, he had just got out of Villawood and he was sort of roaming free in the street in Katoomba. I mean, he hadn't escaped from Villawood. He had actually been allowed to leave.
Yes, I went a number of times and went in to talk to people. He was just absolutely horrendous.
Oh, you can just go in there?
Yeah.
You can. You know, I mean, Lee Rhiannon, the senator, she said that she had been there several times. And that, you know, she had been noticing the very serious deterioration in the spirits of the people who were in there, you know, that people were becoming more and more withdrawn in many cases. So you're doing a great thing there.
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much. So are we going to close with...